This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Well, I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your huckleberry.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Fight's not with you, Holiday.
I beg to differ, sir. We started a game we never got to finish. Play for blood, remember?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I was just fooling about.
I wasn't.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two. Dirt and Sprague with you. Hope your Thursday's going well. Tomorrow's Friday.
Tomorrow is Friday, man.
Told my 8-year-old, wait till you realize how much better Fridays are when you're an adult.
Fridays are the best. The older you get, man, you just look forward to Friday all week.
Although some could make a claim, guys, what you do for a living every day is basically Friday.
Yeah,
and you're not
just
wrong.
This is true. We don't have real jobs.
But we have a lot to get to here in the second hour. We're also going to talk a little Washington preview with the voice of the Huskies, Tony Castricone. He's going to join us at 1:45 for crunch time. But let's talk with our good friend Ross Dellinger, who does a great job covering college football for Sports Illustrated. We just tweeted out his recent piece about the Big Ten and how science kind of might be on their side of changing the 21-day window protocol that Graham Mertz, who tested positive for COVID, he is going to be out for 21 days. There's now kind of the support in the medical field and within the Big Ten to maybe change that policy. And Ross joins us now. Ross, great piece, man. Thanks for hopping on with us today. We always appreciate the time. I want to start, I guess, with how much do you think Barry Alvarez is currently behind this push? Because he's quoted quite a few times in this story. He's a very powerful voice within the college football world. This feels like, I think, from the outside, a very Barry Alvarez push. But how involved do you think he is in that?
Well, I think certainly he is a big voice, not just in Big Ten, but in college football in general. I don't know how on this specific issue, how involved he is. And I'll say, when I called him yesterday morning and told him the results of that study, the cardiology study on the heart that we wrote about, that was the central focus of the story, he didn't know about it. And it just came out on Monday, so a lot of people didn't know about it. So I'm not sure how much he had really been pushing this before, but obviously him knowing now about the data, and then his own quarterback being falling under the 21 days. I'm sure if he hadn't previously pushed for it, he will begin doing so, because certainly the science and the data that's coming out, although the study and the data isn't quite complete yet, it's in the middle of still kind of being gathered, but we're roughly, as the doctor told me, we're roughly halfway through gathering that data, and it shows that so few heart abnormalities are happening in athletes that they are recommending for those who are asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic, recommending no heart screening at all. And as we know, the 21 days in the Big Ten, the 21-day suspension is because of all the heart screening that the kids have to go through, the athletes have to go through, and now we're learning that they might not be necessary.
Yeah. What would you put the percentage chance of this getting overturned, at least in the short term? Because I think the Big Ten, we all knew, and the Pac-12 is in the same regard, like you're kind of playing on thin ice. You miss a game, you can't make it up, and you didn't want it to happen to one of your better teams in the second week of the season. But now you're kind of under a microscope. The study's coming out. But the Big Ten presidents have been very cautious about this the entire time. And you know, some even would argue they didn't even really want to come back. It was just a, we got to make money and it's public pressure. What do you think the percentage chances that they actually end up making a decision to change the quarantine period here in the next, I don't know, 2-3 weeks?
I doubt it would come that soon. I doubt many conferences are going to change their protocols just off of this study, which again is not quite complete. I think they'll probably wait until there's a national NCAA registry that's been started to collect heart data on college athletes, and until that's complete, which it should be by the end of November, early December, according to someone who's heading up that registry, then I think from there you'll see some changes being made. So it probably is going to be a few weeks, if not a couple months, before actually you see some changes. But you never know. I mean, the Big Ten isn't the only one that has cardiac screenings. All the Power Five programs do cardiac screenings, are required for the athletes who have tested positive. The thing with the Big Ten, obviously, is while everybody else has like a 10 to 13 day window on a return, the Big Ten has the 21 days. And a lot of that is because they do more intensive heart screening, including a cardiac MRI, which really no other conference does except the Big 12. And the way the Big Ten does it, and again, the cardiac MRI was a centerpiece of that heart study and how it's really not necessary.
Yeah. Ross Dellinger's our guest here, covers college football for Sports Illustrated. It's got a good piece on the Big Ten with their 21-day break that they give kids who test positive for COVID and how that might change at some point given what we've seen with some of the medical stuff that's come out now involving athletes with COVID. Ross is on Twitter at Ross Dellinger. Give him a follow. Now, let me ask you, because the Big Ten canceled or postponed their season. They got a lot of blowback. Then they secured their testing deal and they decided to come back. The Pac-12 was in a very similar state where they postponed / canceled. And then they changed their tune. Now they're starting later and they're starting next weekend, not this weekend. Now, let me ask you this, Ross, given what we've seen in the SEC, the ACC, and now in the Big Ten, do you think the Pac-12 is right now looking like the smartest conference, at least so far early on, with delaying and waiting and just kind of figuring this stuff out and watching how other conferences are dealing with this?
Well, you know, that's a tough one to answer. I think that if you look at and I'm going to be, obviously, I'm probably a little biased here, just where I'm from and what I've covered, but you look at what the SEC did, and that was delay their season by about a month. And for now, they're three or four weeks, I guess, into the season, almost halfway there. And they've had only two postponements, and both of those have been rescheduled with a chance to make it up. I think the right move is kind of what they did. Now, I know the Pac-12, they couldn't do that. I know because of state regulations out there, they couldn't do it. But the Big Ten could have, and that's what's kind of baffling to a lot of people. And the Big Ten presidents had a chance to kind of do what the SEC did and delay the season by a month, not just completely shut it down. And they voted against that at least once, maybe twice, in delaying the season. And I think the smart move was to delay the season and not do a complete shutdown. But I know out there in the Pac-12, there were some differences. I mean, it's in a lot of ways, it's like a whole different country out there. And I know that the state laws and the local regulations and stuff really prevented teams from even practicing adequately. So it made sense what the Pac-12 did. It did. But for places where you didn't have those local issues and regulations, I think delaying the season like the SEC did, it was the accurate move. I think what we're going to see too, and we've seen, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are doing the daily antigen tests. Antigen tests aren't perfect. And I wonder if we're going to get to a point where more PCR tests are going to be done. You know, the SEC went away from antigen tests because they were getting so much falsities. They were getting a lot of false positives, and we've seen that come up in the Big Ten actually quite a bit. I don't know how the Pac-12 numbers are when it comes to the false tests, but I think you look at every conference and They did their own thing based on the regional situation. But I never could quite understand why the Big Ten didn't just delay like the SEC. And again, certainly the Pac-12 is in a little different boat. But what's going to be difficult is playing 7 games in 7 weeks. That's going to be trying, and we're already seeing the Big Ten trying to do it, play 9-9, and it's, you know, they're obviously not going to do it. They're going to be Nebraska and Wisconsin are at least going to be down one game now.
Yeah. Well, and Ross, to your point too, here in Oregon, we just had 5 tests and they were all positive, and they did a second test. They were all false positive. Yeah, so to your point,
Everybody's going to have to deal with that. This, I mean, you mentioned Nebraska, Wisconsin, not going to be able to play a full slate. Nebraska tried, they scheduled a game or at least had a deal in place to try and play Chattanooga, and the Big Ten was like, nope, that ain't happening. What do you make of just the relationship between the Nebraska football program, athletic department, and the Big Ten? Because this has been bubbling over now, it feels like, for a long time, and then culminating in the Wisconsin stuff getting canceled. Their fans are all in on conspiracy theories, saying this is only happening because Wisconsin was going to have to play with a 4th-string quarterback. Then they had a game scheduled. The Big Ten won't let them play it. Just what do you make of that back and forth and where that relationship is at?
Yeah, it's not in good standing for sure. I don't know what to think of it. And of course, I wonder, and I haven't seen the contract that when it comes to the conference contract that Nebraska signed, but I know that there's some unhappy people up there in Lincoln. And you got to wonder, like, you know, will they whenever the contract's up or whatnot, will they reevaluate, being part of the Big Ten? I have no idea. And I haven't talked to anybody out there, but there's such animosity, I feel like, building between the two, the conference in Nebraska, that you do have to wonder if they're going to be reevaluating whether that marriage was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Ross, how different has it been covering college football so far for you this year versus any other?
Well, a little less travel, obviously. I still travel probably every other week, not quite traveling weekly like I used to. So that's one thing. And then, of course, you don't have the in-person face-to-face interviews that you normally would have. You still have some, and especially in the South, they're a little more relaxed on some of this. So you do have some face-to-face stuff, but not as much as normal. And it's probably not as worth it to travel to games because you have Zoom calls and there's really not even that much of an atmosphere. So it's been weird. It's been certainly a bizarre season so far.
Yeah. Who are your 4 best teams so far? Are you going to put a Pac-12 team in there, even though they haven't played yet?
Wait, I'm sorry. What was that?
All right, who are your 4 best teams in college football? Because I like these rankings where the Big Ten was getting teams ranked before they started their season. The Pac-12 has a couple teams. We haven't seen them play at all. Who are the 4 best teams in college football, Ross?
You know, before the season, we had to do our like crystal ball 4, and I think I want to say I picked I did pick a Pac-12 team. I think I picked Oregon to be in the playoff. I picked Alabama, Clemson, Oregon, and I think Ohio State. And so far, I wouldn't change those picks.
Yeah, are we making too much of the schools who get a game canceled and how that could keep them out of the playoff conversation? I saw this on ESPN today. They're doing one of the talk shows, and well, is this going to cost Wisconsin a playoff spot because they had a game canceled? I viewed this going in as, I'd imagine the committee knows there's going to be a game or two canceled for almost every team, possibly. I can't fathom how that's going to hurt a Wisconsin if they play 9 versus only playing 10. But what say you, if the Pac-12 has Oregon, let's say it's Oregon, your pick, they go 5-0, but they had 2 games canceled. Do you think the committee would frown upon that and keep them out, or do you think that would have to qualify them for the playoff?
Boy, the committee's got its toughest year yet on these things. You know, usually they're trying to decide on 12-1 and 13-0, but now you're gonna look at 5-0 and 6-0 versus 10-1 or 9-2. It's gonna be really weird, and I don't know. I don't know what you do. I guess you still have to look at that strength of schedule number, but certainly the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are, they're probably going to be in a little bit of a tougher spot than the other conferences. when you play more games, it does give you more chance of losing, of course, but at the same time, it does build up its strength of schedule number, and we know how important that is to the committee. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be the toughest year for them, for sure.
There we go. Ross Dellinger does a great job for Sports Illustrated covering college football's latest piece on the Big Ten potentially maybe looking to reverse their course on the 21-day policy, as Graham Mertz is on the COVID list for 21 days. But some medical research is being done, and it's come out that maybe suggesting that's a bit longer than they need to do. We'll see where that story goes, but it's a great write-up piece. You can find it on our Twitter, at Durton Sprague, and on his Twitter, at Ross Dellinger. Ross, we always appreciate the time out here in Portland, man. Thanks so much for hopping on. Good piece, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, y'all. Thanks.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Ross Dellinger of SportsIllustrated.com on the Big Ten with their 21-day protocol.
Very interesting twist based on what the news we've had out of the Big Ten here in the last couple of days. The Wisconsin stuff they're going through, the 21-day quarantine, not being able to play Nebraska this weekend, not sure how long it's going to linger. As you mentioned, Barry Alvarez quoted all over this story. I found it interesting that he said that he reached out to comment. Barry hadn't even seen the story yet, because this reeked of a Wisconsin leaking this study to Ross and saying, let's publish this so we can get a change in the protocols. But that clearly is not the case. But nothing sounds imminent in the Big Ten in terms of a changing course of action.
All right, coming up next, what the hell is this team doing? What are we thinking with this one? That's next on The Fan.
Lost the job.
Well,
been
Dirt,
off. I'm kinda hungry. Can't eat till I
imagine having a young, up-and-coming team.
Okay.
They take a big step forward this year.
Ooh, okay.
You're getting real excited.
Yeah, my pants are tight.
And then you decide to part ways with the coach. And then you hire a 76-year-old coach who hasn't been in the league for almost a decade. How are you feeling about it now?
Because
the White Sox did that today. They parted ways with their manager not too long ago. And there was a rumor about Tony La Russa wanting to come back. He's been in Chicago before, years and years ago.
Years ago.
I believe it was his first gig. Yeah, it was his first managerial gig.
Turned the clock back a long time to get to that.
When I saw the story first come out, the Chicago media largely didn't buy it and actually went against it. So there's no way this is real. Oh, my God. You got to be kidding me. This would be a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And then it died a little bit. And then today they announced that Tony La Russa is their manager. Tony La Russa is 76 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's been out of baseball since 2013.
Let me pull it up. Yeah, officially.
Somewhere around there. He's already in the Hall of Fame.
I think he left on. He pulled an Elway, if I remember. I think they won the World Series and he was out of there.
When did they win that, 12 or 13?
They won two of them, I thought at least. No, they lost. Wait, hold on. His last year was 2011. Yeah, so when they beat 11. The Rangers, remember, that was the David Freeze game six. They came back and won, and then they won game seven. Some would argue the best World Series of all time.
Dirt, we're like a month and a half away from 2021. He's been out of the game for a decade. He's 76. What are they doing in Chicago? I don't understand this.
Let me bring this other gentleman up, because the name that I thought of when this move happened, now again, the ages are not going to be identical, because I believe he came back as a coach when he was like 61, 62. But a semi-similar thing happened with Jim Leland. So Jim Leland was a manager for a long time, the Pirates, the Marlins, the Rockies. He had a lot of great years. He won a World Series with the Marlins. He was basically a full-time manager from 86 to about 2000.
Smoking
heaters, like no big deal. And then he took about 6-7 years off and then came back and was the manager of the Detroit Tigers. And they had some good years in Detroit. Oh, they got it to a World Series in 2012. He made a ton of postseason appearances. Like, he had a really good run, and he was out of baseball for a number of years, and he was an elderly manager. So this has worked before. I think the fear is you have a young, exciting, fun, up-and-coming, like, brash, outlandish team, and you're bringing in this old fuddy-duddy to manage them. Like, how is that going to gel? The positive spin I would put on it is there's not many managers out there that you can go find outside of, well, I guess he has the same number of World Series as Bruce Bochy, and he's a longer tenure manager than Bruce Bochy. Like, there's not many guys out there that have the experience that he has. Like, the guy has three rings. He won one in Oakland. He won two in St. Louis. He was seen a ton in baseball. He's helped usher a bunch of different organizations to relevancy. He's been pretty decent in front office roles that he's been on as he's bounced around baseball since he retired. So it's not like this guy's been sitting on a yacht and in a, you know, hammock for the last 10 years with nothing to do with the game of baseball. He's been in front offices drafting and evaluating talent. He stayed engaged with the game. That's the positive spin, is you have a young team that doesn't really know how to win. Let's go find a manager that has like 800 years of managerial experience and bring him in and see if he can steward us to the future.
Yeah, see, here's the thing, though. Your example, I like the example. The comp is fine. Leland, what'd you say he was, 61?
I think he was 61, 62 when he came back with Detroit. Yeah.
By the way, that's an old-looking 61.
The heaters, you know? The heaters wear you down.
Yeah.
La Russa, at least,
but that's a 15-year difference.
It is. La Russa's like, he's a super healthy vegan bro. Like, he's, him and Leland are very different characters.
Okay, and that's fine. But again, 76, and this is probably just going to be staff-dependent, right? Like, you got to hire the right staff, and you'll be okay. But if you don't, I don't know if a 76-year-old's clicking in that locker room. Hey, guys.
It could be, yeah.
22-year-old Nick Madrigal is going, sure. What the hell are
I understand the fear. I don't think Tony La Russa, I think we're over-exaggerating our up character a little bit.
No, I know, but.
And he's not like, hey, where's my pants? Like walking around the clubhouse.
But
like,
76
not knowing
is
where he
not
is.
Young.
It's not, but the president of the United States, whoever ends up winning the election, is basically going to be 76 during the next term. So maybe 70 is the new 60. Well, I don't know.
A lot of people would tell you they're not happy about that.
Sure. Maybe we should have somebody of a younger age in office. I agree with that point. No, I think you're going with the experience. I think that's the angle that you're trying to play here with the White. I understand why White Sox fans are pissed. They wanted a young and up and coming coach, but there's not, you know, and I was thinking about this the other day. I can't remember if it was during a Braves loss or Dodger loss or somebody was losing. And it was funny watching everybody chirp on social media about the manager of the losing team. It probably was a Dodger game because Dodger fans hated Dave Roberts. Now they love him because he won a World Series. And it got me thinking, what percentage of sports fans, if you can take all your fandoms, college, pro, whatever sport you want to, what percentage of sports fans like their coach and think their coach does a good job?
I think a lot of fans think their coaches, depending on how good or bad they are, obviously, but
sure.
Like, let's take Portland. Let's use Portland. I think more people, the majority would tell you they think Terry Stotts is a good coach.
Sure, good coach.
Where you get caught up into debate is if can you do better? Should you try to do better? And that's the trickiest thing, I think, in all of sports. And, you know, the Dave Roberts thing, like, he's no different than any other coach. I think the only coaches exempt from, like, legit get him out of here criticism are probably Belichick, yeah. Andy Reid.
Not like Pete Carroll's maybe in that category.
Yeah, Hawk
Popovich.
Fans, he's a defensive coach, and their defense has been awful since the Legion of Boom got hurt. So I don't think they're going to run Pete out of town, but I think it's fair that there's probably a decent Hawk fans that are like, hey, what's going on that side of the ball? Because Russ is fine.
Right.
I'm trying to think of NBA. Like, Carlisle seems untouchable, but I don't know how Mavs fans feel about him. Maybe they're cool with it because the Mavs won a championship. Pop, obviously, in San Antonio.
Listen, my point is, it's a very small. There's
you
not
only have
a
like two
percentage.
Or three in every league that are probably like universally respected and thought of as the top in their business. And then it's probably everybody else is a mixed bag with their own fan base.
So I think the argument that I'm trying to make here is that it's a very small number of people that are actually happy with the coach or the manager in baseball. That they have. Would you rather, if you're a White Sox fan, that they go out and hire somebody that's going to be an analytical arm of the front office and make moves a la some we're seeing around baseball?
Should they have hired AJ Hinch?
No, I wouldn't want anything to do with that. That's just me personally, but I don't want that stench, man. I don't. That guy got suspended for a year for a reason. He was connected to cheating. I don't think AJ Hinch had a ton to do with the Astros winning the World Series. I think they had a really talented roster, and also they cheated to get there, and we're just going to act like this guy's a hot commodity and we should go pick him up. I'm not saying AJ Hinch is a terrible manager, doesn't know baseball. Of course he does, but no, if you give me the choice of a La Russa or AJ Hinch, I'll go with Tony La Russa. And I don't think that the players are going to have a huge backlash to this. I don't know.
Well, he's a pretty respected dude.
Well, that's my point. Like, dude, if you're going to bring in a guy and he's going to walk in on day one of spring training with 3 World Series rings on, like, think about all the great players over the years that he's coached, all the way back to his time with the White Sox in the 70s and the 80s, the Bash Bros in Oakland, like all those great teams that he's managed in Oakland, Pujols and all the characters that came through when he was a Cardinal manager. Like, this guy has a ton of experience, and he can impart that wisdom on a really young team.
So you're cool with managers knowing about steroid use, but not cheating signs, huh?
I am. I'm okay with that because everybody at least was doing steroids.
Wouldn't it be kind of funny if he played into this a little bit? Because you know this is the narrative now with White Sox-related conversation in Chicago is how old he is. It'd be funny if he played into it in spring training and showed up on a cart.
It would be really funny, wouldn't
it? You know
what
I mean? Just as a joke, he just rolls up. Hey, guys. And then he just stands up and says, oh, I'm just kidding.
Well, and this might be a ridiculous, and I don't know if I can name it. I'm sure there's some old timers that, you know, like pre-1950s baseball. How many managers in the history of the game have made 6 World Series appearances? That's got to be a pretty limited
list.
Pretty
rarefied air.
Pretty, yeah.
Outside of Dodger teams from the, or Yankee teams, from the 1920s.
Casey Stengel. Well, didn't they go a bunch in the Mickey Mantle era,
sure,
too?
Sure, yeah, 60s. Yeah, they probably made a bunch there.
This is very reminiscent to me of the Joe Gibbs retread. Now, I'm not saying it's going to go as bad, but
well, the difference is
Joe Gibbs was away for a pretty decent amount of time, and then they brought him back, and it just didn't go well.
I agree with you. Being a baseball manager is a much easier job than being an NFL football coach, especially in this era and league with the American League where you have a designated hitter. You got to set your lineup. You got to decide when to take your starter out, but now you got to make them face 3 guys, so it's not like you're interchanging relief pitchers all the time.
How many coaches in the NBA are untouchable? I think I can only name 3. Spoelstra, Carlisle, Pop. Can you add anybody to that list?
Steve Kerr, wouldn't he kind of be untouchable a little bit? No? A little bit?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, Warrior Finn probably would go to that level because what
a couple
they
of
established.
Rings and,
yeah.
I don't think the team's going to fire him. Kerr might decide his conditions or
he
such.
Would walk away.
He'd walk away. I don't think the team's going to get rid of him.
But those are 4. That's probably the 4 in the NBA. Who's the Belichick, Reed, Carroll?
You could
go younger coaches because you like Shanahan in San Francisco is probably untouchable right now.
Tomlin's
a good one.
But even, dude, they flirted with Tomlin for a number of years there. There's been you hear those, like Terry Bradshaw, he doesn't know football.
Just media rumors versus the team. I don't remember the Rooneys ever wavering about Tomlin.
Continuity.
Sean Payton, I would say, is in that category.
So there's maybe 5 or 6 guys in the NFL, and then baseball is... It's a very unloyal sport.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anybody.
Right, there's not.
Maybe Bochy before he retired was it?
Bochy was for sure there before he retired.
Roberts has got a few years now with that World Series.
Well, Bochy's going to come back and manage again. Just a question of how long he wants to take off. And when this White Sox job opened up, that was one that popped into my mind. If you're going to come back and manage, you're not going to go through a rebuild. He's up there too. So if you're bringing him back, he's going to want to go to a team that can contend, but they're going with Tony La Russa.
Baseball's so much more dependent on who the GM is versus the owner, because the manager has to execute the philosophy and game plan of the GM. So if an owner's going to change GMs, it doesn't matter how ingrained that manager is. If it doesn't fly with the new GM, tough.
Yeah. Most unloyal, hockey or baseball? It's got to be hockey. Those guys get fired a year after winning the cup 4 games in.
It's pretty ruthless in hockey, man.
They do not care about coaches.
It's pretty, even like Doug Peterson's an example. That's like the guy won a Super Bowl. Like, it's been up and down the last 2 years, but
that's starting to wear out.
It buys you at least a number of years of even in a city like Philly. Like, all right, let's give this guy a little time.
All right, what do you want to get to next?
What do we want to do next? We got Husky stuff coming up. Let's get to. I want to talk about this Trevor Lawrence thing. Did you see that earlier this week?
I'm not buying it at all.
The threat? The threat?
0.
Okay.
Let's talk about that. Trevor Lawrence says he's not certain he's coming out of Clemson this year. You buying that? And then Tony Castricone, the voice of Washington Husky football. We're doing a Pac-12 preview, getting ready for the season. He'll join us for crunch time. All of that is ahead. The Pro Football Challenge just around the corner at 2. We'll get to all of it next on radio.com and 1080 The Fan.
Hey, Tony Castricone is going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes. He is the voice of the Washington Huskies. Jimmy Lake with a pretty funny joke today on Twitter. So we'll talk some Huskies, preview their season. Did you see they're coming on with like Pac-12 basketball schedules?
Yeah, I've been seeing that.
Okay. Did you see they scheduled Oregon, Washington for the same day as Oregon, Washington?
Ooh, what time is that going to be? That's probably going to be time dependent on
the
football game.
Yeah, the basketball
game. They haven't released times yet.
Okay, they're playing on the same day.
And they haven't even released, well, there's a few specific days, but it's just kind of the matchups.
Okay, why would you do that?
You're driving the rivalry. Remember last year, Peyton Pritchard's game winner
at
UW?
That was an incredible game up in Seattle. But if the game's going on at the same time as the football game, guess what?
Nobody's watching that.
Nobody's going to watch that.
Nobody.
So
I'm wondering if the same network might have both of them.
You do like a double header, football to basketball?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know who's got it.
I just saw that and I was like, that's kind of, I could see like maybe a Friday, you know, you do the basketball game Friday night, football game Saturday. Like, hey, let's have an Oregon-Washington weekend.
Well, your basketball team, by the way.
Uh-huh.
They're recruiting like hell.
You're damn right, baby.
God.
All those guys, they're going to be really good. They got all those players.
All those dudes.
All those players, man. They're really good players.
I think that was the day that Oregon was supposed to be at Michigan. I think that was going to be the Michigan game. Okay. And I think that was going to be like a 10 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m., 10 a.m. Pacific, something like that on one of the net, like,
it was last year. Remember, they played on CBS. It was a great game, and they hit it late three.
So they plugged that weekend in, and they might be filling a network TV slot with that game.
Okay. Well, I just saw that. That's happening. We'll talk some Huskies coming up here in a moment. Trevor Lawrence is going to be in the news the rest of the year because he's probably going to win a Heisman, and Clemson looks a tad unstoppable right now. And everybody thinks the next stop for him is the number one overall pick in the NFL draft after leaving Clemson this year. Well, not so fast. Trevor Lawrence was doing an interview on Tuesday about this, and they said, hey, you know, what are you thinking, man? You going to go to the NFL? And he said, quote, my mindset has been that I'm going to move on, but who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen.
Yeah, like nothing.
Is anybody buying that Trevor Lawrence might stick around for a senior season? Part one of the question. Part two of the question, if the New York Jets are the number one overall drafting team, which it seems overwhelmingly likely that they are going to be, how strong of a move do you play here? Is it maybe I'll come back, maybe I won't play for you? What's the thought process there?
Well, on the first question, whether he's staying or going, he just told us he's going because he just said his mind.
Well, but you don't know. But he, who knows, though? You know, his mind is there, but who knows?
His mind is there, and yet something is going to pop up like, hey, go be Peyton Manning and play one more year.
I view this as the first threat to the Jets of like, you know, I'm probably going to go, but I don't know.
Well, and look, I don't think you should be wrong. I think your opinion actually might be right. Why should he not strong arm his way the way Eli did out of going to the Jets?
Why would you want to go to the Jets?
Here's the only bright spot about the Jets. Well, you got a couple. The first is you're in New York.
Yeah.
Right? I know we can downplay that. That means something to athletes, right? I just listened to a podcast with Steph Curry, and he was reliving the draft night for him, and he wanted to go to New York so bad. Just to simply be the guy that helped get the Knicks back. And he sat in the draft room and they didn't take him. It's an appealing city and market to athletes. It always will be. There's an idea, I think, that when you win there, you're bigger than you are. You're better than you are. I think Eli is a great example of this. While Eli, you know, thrived and shined in big moments, you give him credit for that.
Get you two of these.
Those two Super Bowls being in New York are the difference between him being a first ballot Hall of Famer and Phillip Rivers might not be, right? But that being said, it's going to be entirely dependent on who they hire as the coach. General manager's weird because they just hired a general manager. So this isn't his coach. These contracts he inherited. So it's like, who, if you think that general manager is good or not, I don't know how you make that assessment. The team is so awful. Quinnen Williams is already on the trade block in some people's minds, and I think that's ridiculous. The kid is 20, 21 years old. He's just drafted by him. We're giving up already. But it's, I think if you go get Lincoln Riley, and I'm just throwing a name out, right? A sexy name for some people. You threw a name like Lincoln Riley out. You telling me he wouldn't be intrigued in playing in that system and playing in New York? If that happens, okay. But I think he should be keeping a close eye. He's absolutely coming out, but he should be keeping a close eye. And if it doesn't look good, dude, strong arm your way out of that situation because there's no way some of these rookies should just be okay dealing and going to some of the organizations that draft them.
The other piece is, isn't the NLI stuff supposed to take effect starting the next season?
I think it's supposed to be approved this summer at some point, yeah.
Is there anybody in college sports that could potentially make more off his name, image, and likeness than Trevor Lawrence if he stayed another? So if he had the ability to generate an income stream and avoid the Jets.
He just likes playing, being, maybe just likes the college experience. Like he's probably living the
hanging
dream
out
in Clemson.
At Clemson, going down the super happy fun slide in the team facilities and carving up the crappy ACC again.
Watching movies with your girlfriend who you're not having sex with.
Pull in like $10 million next year.
And there's going to be, I don't think you're making $10 million here.
And Trevor Lawrence is a pretty big deal.
Isn't there going to be a limit on that?
I don't know.
You're going to let kids make $10 million?
million
a year?
Hey, what the hell, man? If you want to pay it.
I don't know
Coach,
how
shut
they
up. Capitalism, baby.
I don't think they can put a limit on it. I think it would get challenged in court.
Yeah, and they'd probably lose it, too, at that
lose.
Point. Yeah.
He's in.
I think he's leaving.
Guys, can we stop? He's leaving.
I mean, I think he probably is.
He should scare the bejesus out of the Jets.
Yeah,
well,
he should.
The tough part on this, too, and we're up against it. We'll go here in a second. The tough part against this, too, is that it's not like the other teams around them you feel overly confident in. So you can try and strong arm your way out of the Jets. Do you feel great about the Giants?
What if the Patriots go into tank?
Sure, it's going to take a lot of tanking to top what the Jets are, and they'd have to move some picks. And I don't
they're
know
only
why.
Two wins.
Are the Jets going to get two wins?
Well, no, but the point is not about if some team's going to beat them out for the one spot. It's going to be what team is around and willing to give up assets that is far more appealing than what the Jets are. And Belichick and the Patriots would easily be that.
Not many teams that are in that category of not wanting to take a quarterback and move back, because Jacksonville's in that mix. They're not moving back. The Giants would likely take a quarterback if they're there. They're not moving out of that spot. The Falcons, if they're there, like they're going to pass on. If the Vikings end up in that spot, but you're going to draft Trevor Lawrence.
Right, but you're naming teams that would be willing to trade something to even move up and go get him.
Yeah, probably.
The Giants, the Falcons, all those teams are going to be restarting.
Or Washington.
Washington's a good example, right? That could be a good spot if you like Ron Rivera and you think he's going to build a good team going forward. There's a lot of candidates here. I think the Chargers, what were they, the seventh pick?
Herbert
pick?
Was number six, I believe.
No, 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 no. The Eli Phillip Rivers trade.
Oh, yeah.
Fourth pick or something?
No, yeah, they were top five, I think. I think they want to say they're number four.
Right, so if you're in the top five, you could have a situation like where you're just switching. The Jets pick who you want to pick, and then you pick who the Jets want, or vice versa, or whatever. Maybe you make a trade and give them a ton of assets to move up, but I don't think it's out of the realm that he strong arms his way, nor should it be.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence flirts with the idea of maybe sticking around another year. He said his mind's always been set on leaving, but you never know. Never know what could happen, and he probably should do it if the Jets end up with the number one overall pick. All right, let's preview the Washington Huskies. Tony Cascione is going to join us. He's the voice of Washington Athletics. What are they going to be like this year? First year under Jimmy Lake? That's next. Crunch Time on the Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's Crunch Time, a look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. But don't forget, right now they're running a $1 enrollment on any membership, and you get a $25 gift card at any of their locations. Go check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of the locations. We've been previewing the Pac-12 as just a little over, a hair over a week away from the Pac-12 officially beginning. And Washington, one of those teams, are opening up against Cal, a team that they've had some issues with the last 2 years. Joining us now, Tony Cascione, the voice of the Washington Huskies. Go give him a follow on Twitter, at Cascione. Tony, thanks so much for the time today, man. We really appreciate it. I saw a great tweet, and you quote-tweeted it from Jimmy Lake, that just had me cracking up about playing defense on the West Coast. I want to start with him, though. It's a tough year to be a first-year head coach, just because of everything that's going on. How big of a benefit do you think it is of having a guy that's been around the program? Look, there's going to be some bumps, obviously, for a new head coach, but he's been there, so is that transition easier for him?
Yeah, I think that's a real good observation, and I think also this is not a guy who hasn't been in a leadership role. For the defense, it's not really all that different. He's been the defensive coordinator. He's been the leader of that defense, which has been elite over the last couple of years. It's going to be a change on the offensive side of the ball, where they do have a lot more of a fresh start. They bring in a new offensive coordinator. It's going to be a first-time FBS starting quarterback. We don't know who the starting quarterback is going to be, but nobody has any Pac-12 starts under their belt. So, you know, I do think that the fact that there is some consistency, you got the same wide receivers coach, O-line coach, running backs coach on the defensive side of the ball, the D-line, the linebackers, and the secondary coaches are the same. There's a lot of consistency, just not all the consistency you'd like to see. And I think that's part of the reason that they're picked third in the league. That's part of the reason they haven't received that many top 25 votes, is I think so many times going into a season, a lot of it has to do with consistency. The Dogs have average consistency they carry into this year, and so that's why they have somewhat average preseason rankings. But I know, you know, Jimmy being around the program a long time and carrying over a lot of Chris Peterson's way of doing things and a lot of his traditions, I think has a lot of Husky fans excited.
Well, you know, I have questions about the offense because that seems to be the thing. Since Jonathan Smith left, they've taken a step back and not quite been, I think, what people were expecting to be every single year that Peterson's at the helm. And now you got a defensive-minded head coach. But before that, I do want to ask, you know, what went into the hire with him? He's obviously a very beloved coach up there, and kind of the swagger he carries on the sidelines. I love the trash talk he's had about Leach after they beat him in the Apple Cup again, about he doesn't even need to get ready for the game. It's predictable. He's got the elements that you like. Kind of reminded me of when Oregon was going through the crystal ball hire, getting all the support from the players and maybe some people not giving him a legit chance. How close do you think that they were to looking at somebody else? Or do you think this was kind of the move the entire time with Peterson saying, I'm going to step down and I kind of want this young up-and-coming coach that the players love and respect. I want him to take it over. How did that go?
I think the Peterson step down shocked everybody. Like the reaction to the college football world had, I don't think it was a lot different inside the walls in Seattle. In fact, you know, he told the story at his retirement press conference that pretty much the morning of the game against Washington State, a couple of days before he announced his retirement, he and his family were pretty much the only people that knew going into that game. And so, you know, I think the only reason that, let's just say this. I think it had kind of been in the works for a while with Jimmy Lake that I know that when they made him the defensive coordinator, it was because Pete Kwiatkowski, who was the D coordinator at the time, said, look, Jimmy Lake's one of the up and coming coaches in all of college football. And I need to step aside and give him the chance to be the D coordinator, else we're going to lose him. He's going to go somewhere else. He's going to go to another big time program, get the experience he wants because he wants to be a head coach. And I interviewed him before his first game as defensive coordinator, and he was clear about it. I want to be a head coach. And so that was on the radar. And I think because things had gone so well under Chris Peterson and the opportunity for seamless transition was there, I think that was really appealing. So there's that. And I don't know if they would have made such a quick decision if such a perfect candidate for that seamless transition didn't exist. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy was there and he was ready and he was hungry and he wanted it. And so I think that's the reason they went with Jimmy Lake.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Tony Castricone is our guest voice of the Washington Husky. Give him a follow on Twitter, @Castricone. You mentioned the quarterback battle. It's really unique right now in the Northwest. You got four new quarterbacks breaking in at Oregon State, Washington State. We'll see how that goes for everybody this fall. But how do you kind of, I don't know, put the odds on the horse race so far? What are you hearing out of practice? And who's kind of the leader in the clubhouse to win that job?
There are zero words out of practice. That's for sure. Like it is a state guarded secret. It is tight-lipped. I would be shocked if the true freshman Ethan Garbers were to get the start. I don't know. Like based on the other experience that they have in the room, that would really surprise me. I kind of consider it more of a 3-horse race. And I'll tell you, Jacob Sermon and Dylan Morris, both highly recruited kids and both local products. So those are the feathers in their cap. But then Kevin Thompson is got an unbelievable story. And I think his maturity at 24 years old, what he's been through in life, a seventh-year senior, he's had Tommy John surgery. I mean, think about this. This weekend, like 8 years ago right now, Kevin Thompson was walking off the field as a junior in high school, quarterback of his junior team at Auburn Riverside after a 1-9 season. Now, you cannot tell me that that kid at that time, as a 2-star recruit, had any idea that he'd have the chance to even compete for the Washington Huskies starting quarterback job 8 years later. But here he is. He's in the mix. He was third place in the Walter Payton Award last year, which is basically the FCS Heisman. He was a preseason All-American. And anybody with that kind of credential, I think, is going to be a candidate for any BCS-level, you know, quarterbacking job. I mean, we know what these guys can do at the next level. So I am not ruling out him. But he's got a couple of highly recruited local guys that he's going up against. That's why I think it's a really compelling 3-horse race.
Well, you mentioned the new OC in place there. You know, how different is the offense going to look? I know it's a guarded secret of what or who is playing well, but what do we know about the system of the OC and how different that's going to look? What would Husky or Pac-12 fans who are looking to root against the Huskies, what would they be looking at to see now compared to what we did over the years of Peterson?
Well, the words that I keep hearing are pro style. I keep hearing the words multiple, and I keep hearing the words aggressive. So read into that what you will. I really don't know a whole lot other than that, but based on the pro style and the multiple concept, you would expect the tight end to be heavily involved like it has been at the University of Washington. They do want to run the football, and they want to like have the physical style of running. And so there's that. And they've got a nice backfield coming into the season. They really do. And then they've recruited really well at wide receiver over the last couple of years. So it's a young wide receiver core, but it's talented. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him take some shots. I know that they want to be probably balanced on the offensive side, but really it's anybody's guess. You know, I don't know what wrinkles are going to be gone, and I don't know what new wrinkles might be in place, but I do expect it not to be – it's not going to be one of those transitions where you're going from a triple option to a air raid. You know, it's going to be probably a little bit more subtle than that.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun year, man. We can't wait. A lot of unknowns in the Pac-12, unlike the other conferences around the country, really does feel wide open. It's up for the taking, and we'll see how it shakes out. Tony Castricone is the voice of the Washington Huskies. Go give him a follow on Twitter at Castricone. Tony, thanks so much for the time, man. We know you're busy. Everybody's gearing up for the start of the year. We really appreciate it here in Portland.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Anytime. Go Dogs.
There you go. Tony Castricone, the voice of the Washington Huskies.
Sure, a lot of people love hearing that as he signs off.
Yeah, you shut your mouth, Tony. Good stuff, man. Yeah, it's unique. Having four new quarterbacks in the Northwest is going to make for a very interesting year for everybody.
You don't hear about seven-year seniors very often in college. The fact that he was playing as a junior eight years ago is almost his 10-year anniversary.
Dear Lord, when did Chris Winkie come back, man? We're breaking in a 40-year-old there, Washington?
You know, I don't think
that's
this
a great story, though.
Any shocking development or opinion, but you hire a defensive-minded coach, I expect the defense to be nasty. Remember last year going in, they only had two returning starters.
They got a lot of guys back.
And we wondered, you know, they did this before. No, they actually took a pretty big step back. Now they've got kids that have experience. Your secondary's pretty filthy. It's going to be really, and this has kind of weirdly been what the story's been for that program, even when Peterson was in place. If your offense is going to be good, then you've got a great shot to win this conference.
Right, and not even just good, I would say consistent, because I feel like they've shown flashes the last couple of years where, like, Easton had a lot of moments. We're like, hey, this is an NFL quarterback. He looks good. He's big, strong, good arm. They're putting up points. And then they have the game like they had against Oregon State where they couldn't – I think their only touchdown in that game was like a pick six or something.
Well, remember, I think it was the Stanford game and the Oregon game. I think they both went up 14-0, and they blew those leads. Their offenses would just go in these funks every now and then, and they never could get it going again. So I think their defense is going to be pretty nasty, and it's going to be the thing that if they win it, it's going to be because it's the defense that we saw a few years ago when they were winning the conference or – contending for a playoff spot.
Yeah, we'll keep breaking down the Pac-12 as next week is officially game week for everybody. A week from Saturday is when the Pac-12 begins play. Crunch Time is brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Don't forget the $1 enrollment deal on any membership plus a $25 gift card if you sign up between now through Saturday. So you got two more days to take advantage of. But I was at the Glorious House of Gains this morning. Thank you very much, Tom.
Feels great, baby.
Oh, okay, Jimmy. You can give me a feels great. It did feel great, Jimmy. Okay, we got a lot to get to in the
final. Please pull that.
We got a lot to get to in the final hour. We're going to break down a thrilling Thursday night football game, totally in depth.
Are we?
Two deeps, the lines, the over-unders, every aspect of that game, Carolina and Atlanta. Just kidding. We will mention that it's happening. The NBA is thinking about doing something next year that I love, and I want to know how listeners feel about it. We'll get to that a little bit. What else we got? Oh, of course, the Pro Football Challenge, and that's where we'll start the final hour. How did we do last week? What games are we picking this week? We'll start the final hour there next on 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.